Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where our goal is to make politics more accessible and less intimidating.
The show features an interview with an expert in the political field, walking us through the many cues we have about politics, civics, government, and more.
By providing civic education in the places we are, on our phones, and in the language we speak. And yes, we know we say like a lot.
It's kind of the point, because politics needed a rebrand. Happy Wednesday. Welcome back to Girl on the Gov, the podcast. I think I did that in reverse. Usually I say, welcome to Girl on the Gov, the podcast. Happy Wednesday. Yeah. Switching it up on everyone this week.
Wow.
Yeah.
I zone out when you do it. So I can't tell you which direction it goes.
I honestly do too. I think I black it out every time, but that one felt different. And I was like, you know what? That one might have been different. But look, interesting week this sometimes. Week.
Is it?
We have a big GOP debate tomorrow. Are you so excited?
Honestly.
I actually really am.
I didn't even register that it was this week. Like, It's okay. This is how I feel about it because I know everyone is dying to know. I just feel like I've been constantly like inundated with all the yibber yabbering around the GOP people.
You know exactly what they're going to say.
Exactly. Like, even I was reading, I can't remember if this was, like, time is an illusion as per usual. I can't remember if this was this morning or if this was yesterday. It could even have been Sunday. And I was reading, like, The Hill, my usual, like, morning, you know, reading routine situation. And I just skipped the entire section about all of the GOP people. I was like, I just can't. Ugh. It's exhausting.
I'm just excited to see them up against each other and to see, like, how they all play it and like if they're going to be fair. Like who can be the most extreme and heinous, or is there going to be a strategy of like who can kind of like walk the line and be a little more normal but still appeal to that base. Like, it's just going to be interesting to see if anyone plays it right or how they play it, or if it's just going to be like an infighting massacre, which is like obviously entertaining. So I'm just like very intrigued too. It's like, you're right. I know exactly what they're all going to say. They're all going to say some weird fucking shit that sucks and is going to give me nightmares. But it's just, I think the fact they're all going to be on the stage together is really exciting to me. I don't know. And there's just going to be some really funny clips and things to talk about and things to kind of just like, It's a good moment to scare people about the GOP and remind them who the fuck we're up against. And like, this is all happening. And like, these are the options. And, you know, don't ever come for Joe Biden again when you're looking at these other candidates. Like,
yeah, I don't know. I think I also too just have like this mentality, like fate's already like the situation. Trump's and all his rhetoric and DeSantis and all his rhetoric and all these things is like coming to the forefront like every single day. Like, I don't think if you're I think at this point you have to either be scared or concerned about what these people are about, or you've been really like living under a rock. I mean, which is possible, but I just.
No, I mean, I think people have been, and like we're obviously exposed to it all the time. It's what we do. So I think we're
we're a little biased.
But there's definitely a lot of people who don't, you know, every single day see what these people are saying and don't feel the threat the way you do if you're inundated with it every day. But
yeah, no, that's
there's
fair.
Just I just think it's gonna be entertaining. I'm excited to see what comes from it. And Trump has already recorded his interview with Tucker Carlson, who like I totally just like forgot that he's not even on Fox News anymore. And they don't necessarily know where it's going to air. I think like Tucker Carlson has a Twitter show, but then like Trump hates Twitter. So it's like, where is this thing going to air? But it's like already been recorded. It's not even going to be live, but it's going to be at the same time as the debate. It's just like, I can't.
It's such a circus. It's such a fucking circus.
I'm also so interested to see like how they also, the other candidates like play the Trump indicted thing. So there's a poll that said nearly half of Republicans say they would not vote for Trump in a general election if he were convicted of a felony crime by jury in a Reuters poll. But they're all going to be like, you know, on Trump's side with this. And it's just going to be interesting, like, to see if anyone gets asked blatantly, like, if he is convicted of a felony, what do you think? And see, like, where they land. But it's also Fox News doing it. So who knows?
Right. Like, I just don't think it's. Maybe it'll, like, to your point, maybe it'll ring something new and true to someone that hasn't been engaged until now that typically votes Republican. But, like, I just, like, the GOP has, like, set the stage of this, like, the last few years. Like, they don't give a shit. Like, you know?
Well, no, it's like, but they're going to be, it's all going to be so clippable. The clippable moments will be all over TikTok. And just getting those moments in front of people is going to be, I think, good to just remind people, hey, it's about to be another presidential election cycle. Here's who's running. Have some fun. Go watch these clips.
These people are just so insufferable.
I know.
I'm just having no, like, what can I say? I'm just like not in the mood for their bullshit. Not that I'm ever in the mood for their bullshit, but I just like,
I'm never in the mood for their bullshit until it comes to GOP primary season and I get to see them duke it out against each other. That's the only thing I'm excited about, is that it's a new setting where, you know, it's not just them like out there doing their stupid thing, but that they're, you know, I just love debates, period. I think they're really entertaining and always interesting, but a GOP one, it hasn't happened in a long time. And I'm excited to just see how this new era of Republicans function on a debate stage.
We're just going to get you some cage fighting tickets because I think
I have been to a UFC fight and it was the worst experience of my life. I saw a guy get a knee straight to the nose and it shattered his entire shattered into his face and his nose was gone. I was like, Dad, I'm never coming here again. Why did you take me to this?
That,
like, this is stupid. Anyways.
Oh my God, I would have literally fainted because, you know, me and blood, it's not good.
No, me and my sister were not okay. I was like, what are we doing here? What is anyone
that
doing
is,
here?
Wait, you know what? I need to add that to my never have I ever list. Never have I ever gone to a UFC fight. I've never been to a fight. I think the only fight I've ever actually seen is between two people in my grade senior year on the soccer field of Rovoy.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Interesting. But all the fighting aside, we do have an episode for everybody.
Me too.
Today. And Samantha's going to run us through our guest.
Yeah. Well, speaking of fighting, we are talking about fighting for more representation on campaigns and also just like what campaigns look like the classic, like working behind the scenes situation. What does that look like in today's day and age? What does that look like at the state level, beyond? What are the different organizations that are really involved and paramount? I've never used that word in my goddamn life. Paramount? Wow. Send me to Harvard. We're talking about campaigns and all the campaign mishigas and so on with our friend Sarah Andrews, who actually works at one of the organizations we chat about, Emily's List. And if you guys know, we've had Emily's List peeps on the pod before. We love what they do. And we're going to talk to you about what they do in this episode. So I'm not going to spoil it. I'm not going to do it. It's just not going to happen. Not here. Not now. Not anytime. But anyways, without further ado, here's Sarah.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
All right, Sarah Andrews, welcome to Girl on the Gov, the podcast.
It's so fun to be here.
I know. It's so exciting to have you here. We have so much to get into. We have to talk about campaigns, working on them as a mom-to-be more of, and also, of course, like what you're doing now in terms of recruiting candidates. Just so much to get into. But I think we got to start with like how you got into politics and also how you became a campaign manager, which is one of the big roles that you've had so far in politics. I'm curious, like, where did that begin for you? How did it all happen? If you give us a little bit of like a rundown there, that'd be great.
Yeah, happy to. First of all, so stoked to be here with both of you amazing ladies. Love to always build relationships with women across the country that work in this space. So just grateful to be here. So yeah, politics. You know, it's so funny because I feel like this is one of those fields where I talk to so many people and they're like, yeah, I studied like anthropology or I studied physics. And then I just like happened to, you know, get into politics. Like it's one of those fields where some people think, oh, I'm going to go study political science and then go get a law degree. And that's why I work in politics. And for the majority of people, especially in campaigns, like that's just not the trajectory. And I find that the people that excel in this work don't necessarily have the like traditional path that you would think. So I start by saying that because that was kind of similar to how I got into this work. I was a little baby college student. I was studying peace and conflict studies because I went to University of Colorado in Boulder and they had a degree that was that.
That feels
I was
like also it studying. Fits. Like that makes sense.
Yes.
If there's a school that's going to have that, it's there. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a rural Vermont girl, you know, go to CU wearing my Birkenstocks. I also was studying politics at the time, but like didn't really think that politics was the thing for me. Like I wanted to get into journalism. I wanted to join the Peace Corps, right? Like those are the things I wanted to do or I thought I wanted to do. And then I was, a sophomore during the 2012 reelection campaign for the president. So President Barack Obama. And people were, you know, on campus trying to get people to volunteer and make phone calls. And they kept asking me. And I also was like, I've always been a little bit of a type A overachiever. So I'm like, oh, let me sign up for something.
But then they kept calling me and I just like kept ignoring their calls. Finally, I'm like, fine, I'll just go into the field office and make phone calls. This is so annoying. Just maybe they'll stop calling me. And, you know, I tell this story often when I talk to people that are first getting into politics, because some people think like, I'm going to go write a policy paper. And I'm like, just go volunteer and make phone calls. And it was literally mind blowing. I remember the specific script I was calling about. I was calling just women and we were talking about the Affordable Care Act. And it literally changed my life because there was things about the Affordable Care Act that I had no idea affected me or my family, pre-existing conditions, one of them. And it was just really a moment in my life where I felt like I was in the right time at the right place. And so fast forward, you know, many, many years later, and I think back to that moment where I'm like sitting on the ground in a field office. There's literally like two other people in this like windowless box. And I'm making phone calls and like having this epiphany of like, oh my God, I can actually like change people's mind and I don't need to be a policy expert. So I ended up dropping out of college to work for Barack Obama, like many Barack Obama kids. And I'm a millennial and I think that was something that I felt. I remember calling my parents and they were like, wait, you're doing what? You're dropping out of school? But I was like, they're going to pay me $25,000 a year. Like, this is, I'm going to be rich.
Oh my God.
Right. It just goes to show you like how far we have come since then. And I'm going to work 100 hours a week and like get paid basically nothing. So, you know, I felt really strongly about it. I just was so passionate. Like, I felt like I was literally changing the world. I felt like my voice was like a very powerful thing, which as a young person, as a I think I was like 20 years old. That was huge. So fast forward, you know, I ended up going back to college after the Obama campaign. So I was a field organizer. And then I did a lot of different roles. After I graduated college, I interned at the White House, which is an amazing opportunity, but realized like I wanted to get back out there, worked for Hillary Clinton for about 2.5 years all across the country. I just kind of worked my way up. People work in these roles in a lot of different capacities. I'm a sucker for people that work in field because a little bit different now. COVID has kind of changed the political like ecosystem, but I think field is just or community organizing is just like the like soul of politics. Really? And I feel so grateful that I like started in that space. So without going on a total tangent, that's kind of, you know, fast forward, you know, I then end up working for the governor of Colorado on his first campaign as a coordinated campaign director, which is like, we can get into it, but it's just like jargon for coordinating all the different campaigns at all levels for the whole state. And then this last cycle for 2022, he asked me to run his reelect and I were off campaigns forever. I like did a bunch of other jobs in between there on the official side, figured out policy is not all that it's cracked up to be. And was like, I guess I'll go do that job. Like, that sounds fun. They kind of fell into it. Like, you talk to people in this space and like, all they want to do is like, go be a campaign manager for governor or senator. And that was like, not my path. It was just like, well, I guess I'm going to do this now. No, that sounds like really obviously not. That happened because I had worked for the governor for so long. And obviously I'd worked in campaigns. It didn't just like fall in my lap. But I say this to young people all the time that I'm like, keep your head down, hustle, be passionate. Like, you're going to end up in good places. So anyway, that's my long life story. Well, but
I think to your point, like, careers are not straight lines. And I think there also used to be just like such that mentality that they were, and that it's like, okay, you go to high school, you go to school after or not, you pick a career and then you go exactly with that and take the exact steps to get there. And there is no other, you know, sort of lane or path. But I think especially even post COVID too, that has really, really evolved. And I think even more so to your point in politics. And I'm curious too, as a campaign manager, when you got to that role, how post COVID, how that world sort of shifted, what that role looked like. Like, what was it like being a campaign manager in this sort of like new era that we're in?
Yeah. So obviously COVID changed a lot, especially when it came to community organizing, right? And we had to figure out different ways to communicate with people that were not door to door, right? And we know that, or, you know, in this industry, like face-to-face conversations are the most powerful. And so that was something that we just had to shift and evolve. And that happened in 2020. Now in 2022, we were able to, you know, go back to in-person community organizing. But as you all know, it's just a different, and like people now are used to being online. People are used to being in these little boxes. They don't want to come into a field office. Like, and then also, you know, people are busy. And then we see the same issues. Like there isn't enough childcare. There aren't resources for like, for young families to be able to like come in and volunteer their time, but they'll like pick up the phone and like can do a dialer at home. So just like making sure that the field program had like a relational organizing aspect is and continue to be very, very important as we kind of are now in this new era of campaigns. Now, all the other stuff, you know, whether it's comms or research, right, or digital, all of that stuff, I think it evolved. Campaigns always evolve, but none of that was really, you know, affected. I would say the advantage of COVID is people are more apt to like do online events. And so you can have sometimes a broader reach of your candidate, where before it was like, I'll just wait for the candidate to come to my town. And now it's like, oh, I'll just get on a Zoom call and like do a teletown hall or whatever it is. And yeah. I think that's what actually an advantage of COVID. Not to say there's any positives of COVID, but yeah, in this space, I think there's a few.
Well, I think to your point, I do think that it really normalized digital communications and like being on Zoom. Like I do not remember Zoom ever even being a thing before COVID. I'd never even heard of it. I did all my like PR calls. It was all like non-video or like in-person meetings. And then some, like I was almost wondering when the pandemic hit, I was like, who's been using Zoom? Like who's been on this thing? Like what is this technology that's like obviously existed, but just wasn't as prevalent. So I think it's interesting how like those norms have come into things. And now it's like, oh yeah, hop on a Zoom. Totally. Like makes total sense. It would be weird if it wasn't a thing.
I feel like it's totally had its pros and cons too, of just what it's done to organizing. Like it's kind of made it more efficient. It's kind of forced the political space to digitize and innovate. But, you know, it's also, if you think about like 2020 and the way that there wasn't door knocking, there wasn't that face-to-face communication, like Biden only wins by 47,000 votes in three states. So, you know, and he could have probably won by much more if there was that field game there. But, you know, hopefully now we can kind of find the perfect medium of both. But it's just such an interesting conversation. It's going to be something that I think continues to unfold as we go through these elections. But curious from your experience, if you could kind of like draw up or like give us a drawing of like a job description for a campaign manager, like what would the day-to-day look like? Like what's the typical pay range, hours? Like what are the kind of like job description, like bullets of what a campaign manager looks like? I know it probably varies by what type of race you're and campaign you're running, but if you can kind of give that snapshot for people who might have an itch of an interest of maybe doing it themselves or just are always curious, like what does a campaign manager do? How does that function?
Yeah, it's a great question. And like, there's not a great answer because like, to your point, every candidate and every level is going to be drastically different. So, you know, if you're listening to this and you're someone who just graduated from college and you've been a field organizer, like look at being a campaign manager for a state, like a county commissioner or a state legislator. And that role is going to probably consist, like you're going to do everything. You're going to be the finance director. You're going to be the political director. You're going to be doing political outreach. You're going to be raising money. You're going to be, you know, researching the opponents, placing that opposition. If it's a competitive state legislative race, maybe you're going to be doing some radio, TV, mail. So you're kind of doing all of it at those lower level races, which I think is a great place to start, right? If someone is like itching to do the campaign manager role and they don't have like a ton of experience in politics, like look at local races first. City council people need campaign managers, right? Like you can cut your teeth in that, and you could do all of it and learn so much in that one role. Now, you know, being a campaign manager on like a, you know, a congressional race or a statewide race, like governor, like what I did is a much larger scale organization that you're building. I love to describe my role as like a executive of a startup when I was in that role, because that's New York Times did this really great piece in 2016 about like, I think it was like the Hillary Clinton versus Bernie campaign, and that it was like the largest startups ever. Like we, and I was on the Hillary campaign, right? So like we went from $0 to like $250 million, right? In like a year. That's crazy when you think about the tech world, or, you know, how much money they raise and how much, you know, like what that cash flow looks like over a short amount of time. So when you get into these larger races, it's very much like making sure all the pieces fit. So I'm not necessarily like staffing the candidate anymore. I'm not necessarily like pitching reporters or writing press releases. I'm overseeing all of those pieces. But, you know, to your question, like, what does a campaign manager do? It's kind of what you make of it. And what your candidate needs and wants. Like every candidate's different. Every race is different. But whether it's comms, field, finance, digital research, like all of those things fall under the umbrella of campaign manager. Depending on your level, you might be, you know, one foot in, you might be, you know, fully bought into like one of those pieces on any given day.
Wild. I love
this. It's a loaded question.
No, it totally is. Because yes. like you said, and like we're saying, it's like, it really does differ between, you know, level which you're running, also too, like where you're running, how competitive the race is. Is this like a shot in the dark? And, you know, sort of, you know, getting the, you know, legs to a campaign that might lose, but, you know, sort of starting that legwork there or whatnot. I mean, there's just so many different options, but I'm curious for these campaign managers, for your past role too, like, are there support systems for campaign managers? Are there resources? Like, what's that sort of world look like?
Yeah, at every different level, there's usually, you know, a committee or an organization in state or nationally that supports campaign managers. So, you know, anywhere from the state legislative level, there's like sometimes the House Majority Project in some of these states that can help recruit and train managers when they start. At, you know, the congressional, Senate, or governor's level, like the Democratic Governors Association, for instance, was a huge support for me, right? You have these, they're called political desks. And it's actually what I'm doing now at Emily's List for campaigns. So being a support system for, and basically a mentor, advisor to campaign managers to talk them through, you know, maybe they're, I always like to say, like, I'm part-time therapist, part-time advisor, strategic advisor, because sometimes like campaign managers are just like having a tough day. Like we're all humans, right? And this is tough work. And so you just need someone to like, you know, have a gut check, have a, you know, brainstorm with, figure out solutions and not feel like you're being judged, right? I think politics can be this amorphous blob where it's like, well, I didn't go to some Ivy League school and I don't have a policy degree, so I can't do this or like be strategic and make, you know, strategic political decisions. And the truth is like, you're probably going to be better because of that. And having these DGA or Emily's List or the D-Trip be able to be like a mentor, an advisor for campaign managers, and that's like what they've all, it's kind of their bread and butter, I believe, one of their big pieces that they do, is super helpful. And so I would say to people that are interested in doing it, like, you're never alone, right? There's always going to be people out there that are rooting for you, either outside organizations or like people like me, right? That can help and advocate for CMs.
Yeah, that's so funny because it reminds me of when we had Emily Kane on from Emily's List. She's the former executive director, right? I think she said that exactly, about the like therapist part of it. And I was like, that is just such a special piece of the work you guys do, because I'm sure it's so needed.
Plus, like, yeah. Just, I feel like all the craziness that happens in politics, even just like on a given day, like you need a venting space. You need like a safe space to be like, I cannot believe this happened. What should I do? Or even if there's not even an action to the vent, it's like there just needs to be a spot for it.
Well, and you're just thrown in, like, you're just thrown into the fire usually with campaigns. And so to be able to kind of like ask those like quote unquote stupid questions, which we like to ask on our show, to have someone that you feel comfortable like doing that with and like jumping in to have any questions, answers must be so helpful, because not only is it so fast paced, but it's probably just really intimidating space. And especially if you're a campaign manager for the first time and you're supposed to be the leader, and like, who are you supposed to ask? Who's above you that's going to, you know, help you through that? So I think that's such a cool piece of the work you guys do, for sure.
Totally. And to think about like where a campaign manager's career can go and like what that looks like. Obviously, like a campaign runs and then the candidate either wins or they lose. What do sort of the pathways look like post-election for both of those scenarios? Like if the candidate wins, what's typically the path? And what if they unfortunately don't make it past the finish line? What happens there?
Yeah. You know, this is like something that I know every organization really, or not everyone, but like, and especially at Emily's List, like trying to figure out a pipeline for political staff is always really challenging. Like there, I don't think there's like a silver bullet to it, regardless if you win or lose, right? Because let's say, you know, you're working for someone who's already an incumbent, which like is someone who's already in office and they already have all of their team set up, and you win and you're, yay, this is so great. But then they don't have any open positions. And so like working, I always say like politics is a networking game too. And so like working those relationships, seeing, you know, and again, put your head down, try hard, be a good person, be passionate, like good things will happen to you. But you still have to do that like networking game, right? And that can be challenging, especially for young people, and be really intimidating. So I, you know, there's not a great silver bullet, and there's not a great, you know, one organization that does this work. But what I can say is there's great like training programs for folks, like the Blue Light Leadership Collaborative does this. So let's say someone just got off a campaign and they're looking for something, they can go to the Blue Leadership Collaborative, do a campaign management training. We have at Emily's List the finance director training, and then we help, you know, place people onto races. That's, now that's for the political space if someone wants to like keep moving up in campaigns. You know, for someone who's working on a campaign and it's a, you know, someone who's new, they get elected, like there's lots of opportunities, right? When the governor of Colorado was first running and he gets into office, like there was lots of opportunities because it was a brand new administration. So, you know, I always like to say, you know, obviously work for someone that you're passionate about, but also kind of think about the long term. And, you know, you got to look out for you at the end of the day. And so just thinking when I'm talking to people about like, okay, well, what campaign makes most sense for you? Like I screen a lot of potential campaign managers. And that is definitely a question that people ask, like, well, what does the trajectory look for me after this campaign, either, you know, either we win or we lose? And those are the hard questions that I think some people have to ask, especially, you know, the cost of living these days is so expensive. Like we can't afford to be on paid internships anymore. Like that's not a thing, right? So just thinking about like, what are your resources? Where do you want to be? Those are things I encourage people to just like think through. And I'm a, like a resource for that, right? I'm just an example of a resource. And I'm sure you ladies are too, of like what makes the most sense for folks.
Yeah, for sure. Well, to transition, you mentioned, you know, your time as campaign manager. We want to get into some of that because you, like we said, were campaign manager for governor of Colorado. Curious about like how you ended up working on that campaign, and also like we know you received some big news on that campaign and kind of how that all shook out for you. I guess we can start with the kind of intro story and how you got there. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So not to be too repetitive, but you know, just some my kind of life story of how I got into this work. I was working in the governor's administration. I was the chief of staff for a government agency, and I kind of swore off campaigns like, I'm never doing it again. I'm exhausted. I've, you know, put in my time, 100-hour week.
Yeah.
I'm getting old. Like I'm getting, at that point, I'm like getting close to my 30s. Like I can't do this anymore. And then I was convinced to run the reelect. And you know, it's funny because I all of my friends in politics always say like, Sarah, you always say you're never going to do a campaign again. I think you always do another campaign.
I feel like that is everyone who works on campaigns. It's always like, never again. That was fun, but never again. And then it's always like, it's like a drug. You just got to go back at some point.
It totally is. Like, there's those people that do like one campaign and then they're done. And then there's people like me who like go back and forth and they do the, you know, the political side, so the campaign side, and then go back to the, you know, official side. So anyway, that's kind of how I got into it. Is I was convinced, I was asked, and it's hard to say no when, like, it's being a campaign manager. Like, when, like I said,
when you have a long weekend with your friends and you don't feel so good afterwards, you're like, I'm never drinking again. And then next weekend comes along and your friends present you with a fun plan. You're like, well, I'm back. Here I am.
Yeah. I mean, that's like the perfect analogy, actually. I'm going to use that.
There we go.
So yeah, that's kind of how I got into it. So I got married, oh gosh, at the beginning of the campaign, of the reelect. I was supposed to get married like 2 years before, but, you know, COVID happened. Like many soon-to-be brides. I had to post, I think it was almost 3 years I had to postpone my wedding.
Oh my gosh.
It was just nuts. So that was like already in the works. And I got pregnant like really soon after I got married. That was like not something that we planned, but it happened. And, you know, I was at that point like, there's never going to be a good time to like, you know, I'm almost 30 at this point. Like, I'm almost 30. And, oh God, I think I was already 30. I can't remember. I was definitely already 30. And was like, I think, like, we're just going to do it. And, you know, it's going to suck and it's going to be really hard, but we can do hard things.
Yeah.
I can do hard things.
How long until election day was it, like, when you...
When I found out?
Yeah. So, like, when was your due date compared to election day, essentially?
So, I was due June 2nd, and election day was... Yeah, November. So, like, what is that? 6 months? So I'm like, remember doing the math in my head. I'm like, okay, so I get, you know, I have this baby. Hopefully they come early, because in campaigns, I'm thinking about is like when we're going up on TV and when our mail program starts and like when we have to film the commercials. And I'm like, no, I have to be part of that. So I'm like, great. So maybe I'll get induced like a week early. That would be perfect timing. I'll take 6 weeks off, which we can get into that, which absolutely was not enough time, and then go back. And that's literally what happened. Like, our senior advisor on the campaign kind of gave me a hard time. She's like, of course you would like plan your pregnancy to the T of like timing. I ended up scheduling an induction to be a week. So I was going to give birth on May 27th, I think, which was like a week before I was due, or my due date. And I ended up going into labor naturally. Sorry, it's TMI, but on May 25th. So my son was born on May
25th.
Yeah. So
it was the 26th, though.
It was the 26th. That's in the morning, like early.
Birthday buddy still. Cute.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was just funny. So the timing worked out well. But I always say, like, there's never a good time, especially if you're like a working. I mean, it's just a lot for any woman. So much respect for my mom. First, I love my mom. But now, after going through that, I'm like, oh, my God, I don't know how you did this multiple times. Yeah, I took 6 weeks off and I was working definitely through some of that. And I had a friend, mentor of mine, who took over the campaign for those 6 weeks. I am forever indebted to her. An amazing woman that just believes in supporting other women. So I will do it if someone else needs somebody to take over their gubernatorial Senate campaign while they're having, you know, getting maternity leave. I will be there. So just saying. But yeah, it was intense. Like, it was not an enjoyable thing, but it was like going back to work so early and pumping at debates backstage. Like, that happened. Doing debate prep with the governor, pumping. Right. Like, having my breast milk in the communal campaign staff fridge with these like 20 something year old kids who like love them, love my team. But I'm pretty sure they were like, the F is in the fridge. Like, sorry. I mean, I have funny stories.
Do not drink this.
Not drink this. like this little lunchbox that I would carry around with me to a campaign events, like staffing the governor. And people like, oh, that's a cute lunchbox. I'm like, no, that's my breast milk.
Oh my God.
So yeah, it was a wild ride. And I did a few, like, you know, postpartum things ever since, like, created Not Equal. I started a blog after that just to, like, talk about my experience being, you know, being a gubernatorial campaign manager and having a baby with 4 months left till the election. Yeah. It was a fun time.
Yeah, because I feel like, I mean, campaigns, I don't know necessarily who they're made for, but it's definitely not
men.
Women.
Men.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
But like, yeah, but like, even like with men, it's like a lot of the stuff's like inconvenient too, just in general. So I'm like, are they really made for humans? I don't know. Whole other debate. But I'm sure there are so many flags amongst the campaign space that you could say this needs to change for young women, for women in general, for, of course, mothers, like, but are there maybe like two things that you're like, these immediate things need to change to make this space more accessible?
Yeah, I mean, childcare is huge. Like, childcare is a crisis everywhere, no matter what industry, like for everyone in the United States, it's a crisis. And, you know, I think this for both candidates and for campaign staff, like to be able to work in a campaign and take time off and feel supported. Like, it's true. There isn't a lot of spaces or opportunities on campaigns where you could just like go and I don't want to say like take time off, because you're not taking time off. You are not sleeping and you are like in a daze and you're caring for another human being.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's hard when you're in an environment too with a lot of people that are not parents per se yet. And so there's like, I think people don't really understand or haven't been through it. So for instance, I'll use the example of like, I couldn't talk from 5 to 7 p.m. because I had a child that I had to feed and put down to bed. And, you know, some people in the political environment just like didn't understand that, whether like they had kids or not, or whether they just like never, maybe a lot of men in this space that just like never had to deal with it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just like setting clear boundaries, number one, is like really huge, right? Like immediate things that you can do, like set real boundaries, set real expectations. I think obviously having women like me in this space that are open to having staff that might, you know, might get pregnant. And if they get pregnant, that's okay, because we support women, right? We're part of the Democratic Party. That's what we do. It's easier to say than do, right? I find that like this is a space, the Democratic ecosystem, where we love to like talk about progressive change, but like sometimes in our own ecosystems and our own organizations, like, does that actually happen?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not all the time. I mean, I was just thinking about this podcast before we did it, and a great example. So number two, again, is like going back to childcare, is Luba Gretchen Shirley, hopefully I didn't botch her name. She ran for Congress and successfully petitioned the FEC to allow her campaign funds to pay for childcare. Ended up starting Vote Mama. So I'm sure you probably know her, but or heard mm-hmm. of her. But I think that's like a great example of like, what can we do to create a space for women, both candidates. I mean, working at Emily's List, like I see this all the time where people are like, I have a supportive partner at home, but like, let's be honest, like there's usually one person in the relationship that does a lot of the like, that does a lot of the like childbearing work, whether it's like packing the daycare bag or bringing your kid to daycare, or, you know, preparing meals or breastfeeding or whatever it is. There's usually, you know, we call it the double shift, right? Or that's like a term that you probably heard, where you like go to work all day and then you come home to your second job, do laundry, et cetera. So there's like, I didn't answer your question because you said two things and I listed like a million, but
no, there are a million. So I think it's fair.
There are a million, yeah.
I'm curious too. It's such an interesting conversation in the scope of looking at campaign managers or just campaigns in general, since it's such a short
you know, time period of when you're working and doing that role. Typically it's like around a year. So it's really interesting too, because when you think about kind of like some of these reforms we're looking for with like extending like maternal leave and like making that a better option for women, like having, allowing them to have more time to tend to their child after they give birth or more time off before they give birth. But it's like in a campaign, by the time you get all that time off, like the campaign's over, or that it's not even, it's like, mm-hmm. is there ever pressure? Are people like, just step down and then like next election maybe, or we'll help set you up on this other role? It's like, what is the solution for that specific like scope of work of like a timely like campaign role? You know, it's like such a tricky spot to be in, because it's like the best solution would be giving what moms more time off with their child and to be able to like heal and take care of themselves and like, you know, all of that. But also the campaign's over, so it's like then we lose this career opportunity. It's just like tough.
And let's be clear, like, I think also what fuels, and I'm not blaming men at all, but like, there's plenty of men that have kids on campaigns. You just like, yeah. don't hear about it because they go back to work 3 days after their child is born and their partner is at home caring for that child and not in the workforce. So, you know, that also happens, right? And I think that it's just like not right in front of our faces. And I think like, paid family leave is something that is also just a crisis in our country. Like, it's just, it's crazy that we don't support men and women after they have a child, whether you give birth or not, it shouldn't matter. Like, it's really yeah. a broken system that we have. And I think it goes to the crux of your question, which is like, what, you know, what do you do? And especially on campaigns, like you said, where it's like, it's a set time. So you can't yeah. just like come back. Like, you have to kind of
pick up your work later. It's like, no, it's, there's a deadline.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I have a friend who is a man who works in campaigns, and he had on his second child when he was managing a congressional campaign, and like literally no one even knew. I remember he was like, oh, my wife's due in 3 weeks. And I was like, wait, what are you doing? Or like, what are you doing? And he was like, well, I'm going to go to the hospital and then I'm going to go back to work. Like right yeah. after.
Yeah. Because the way I would murder that man would be dead. He would be 6 feet under. He would be swimming with the fishes. I'm just putting it out there in case any very hot billionaire, but like liberal men are listening to this and think about proposing to me. That is your warning. Anyway,
he's a wonderful person, but I just was like a crazy exit, right? It's like, because he could do that and no one, yeah. like he didn't actually right. have to like go through but a also massive like, surgery. Why, or,
yeah. And it just makes sense, especially given the scope of work. It's like he has mm-hmm. to kind of get back on it because there's this big election day that we have to be prepared for, and that there it's like literally the clock is ticking. But like, women don't get that luxury with the specific job, so it's like, it's hard. And again, but in like the regular corporate world, like, yeah, he better be like taking time off and like taking care of his, you know, partner and his child. And but if you don't have that luxury with the campaign, then like you kind of should go back to work just like you did. But like, you obviously had to go back to really hard circumstances and deal with, you know, having a new child, which is just, I plan to go into a dark hole when I have a child. Like, nobody talk to me. Excuse me and my baby. Goodbye.
Maddie's in a cocoon. Yeah. And no one yeah. has served more.
In isolation. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, no, but one I probably shouldn't have done.
No, but I think it also makes me wonder too, if like the way that we campaign in general needs to change. Like, is it also too like changing how far in advance campaigns begin, or changing sort of like the scope of work or the structure of a campaign? Like, is there anything in that realm that you think could change that would also, I think also paired with childcare, that could like really help?
You know, it starts at the top. It's, yeah. I mean, I hate to say it, but like, this is an institutional problem where it's all about, I mean, with business, it's all about the bottom line. And with this industry, it's all about winning. And when you kind of take a step back, what does winning mean? It means spending the least amount of money. It means start having the smallest runway. it, you know, it means being the scrappiest. And mm-hmm. so fortunately, the institutions of political campaigns are not necessarily set up for, you know, women or candidates, right, that are who also are women, right, to like care for young children, have a baby. I mean, this is like why Emily, just to come back to Emily's List, like another reason why Emily's List exists and why we started over, you know, almost now 40 years ago, was to help break this like institutional problem, right? This is why we had a Congress that was majority men. Like, we still only hold, what, 28% of the seats in Congress. Women only hold 28% of the seats in Congress. And this is because of like a societal, you know, or institutional breaking point. Like, I think again, we go back to like, talk is cheap. Like, how do we actually make change and from the ground up? And like, that's what Emily's List does, right? We like give women the resources. We, you know, I was talking to a woman, a consultant who's based in Chicago. She's much older than me. She's been in this work for many, many years. And she was saying, gosh, like, you know, 15, 20 years ago, when it was like the year of the woman, what was it, 1990 something, 1992, was like when I was born, basically. And literally, there was like these women, like ecosystems. And it was like, this person is going to take care of the kid and bring food to the candidate and drive the person, you know, drive the kids to daycare and just to like support women that were running for office in that way. I'm like, where did that go? Like, we need that. Like, that's the organization that we need to like, either we need to do it at Emily's List or we need to like figure out a way to do it somewhere, because that's the problem, right? Like,
yeah,
paid family leave, childcare, all the societal issues that we face like trickle down into now what we are talking about, which is like women in politics. And that's just, not to be like a downer, because I think there's lots of good things that we can do, but like, it's going to take time, right? It's 2023 and we still only have 28% in Congress.
Right.
Like,
totally.
What it's is happening?
Yeah, totally. Well, you are a superhero for all of your amazing work, and just hope to see more and more of it. And hopefully we can start to break down some of these barriers. But tell us a little bit more about your role now at Emily's List, and particularly like what you guys are working on leading to 24, which is going to be huge. I'm sure things are kicking up, but what's new?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, so a lot. So after the campaign, I took some time, well-deserved time off, I will say, with mm-hmm. my little guy, which was great. I called it my sabbatical.
Love it.
It's so that people were like, so what are you doing now? I'm like, I'm on a sabbatical. And then people just shut up after that.
See, like, that I love. It's knowing like what will just shut people up and having just those cues ready to go. Honestly, that would be like a fun little like pocket dictionary to have, like little terms for politics of like just immediate shut up moments.
I remember when my professors used to like say, they're like, going on sabbatical next semester, you won't see me. I'm like, what are you really doing?
Like, what does that mean?
You're smart for implementing.
And then Maddie began to snoot. And that's how that all went down.
So, yeah, for anyone that's listening that's in between campaign jobs, if someone asks you what you're doing, you just say that you're on sabbatical and no one will ask you anything else.
Yeah.
So I started with Emily's List a few months ago as the federal gubernatorial campaigns director. And it's been amazing. I mean, I love what I do. I think this is a fun fact about me. When I was in college, and I went back to college after I dropped out and then ended up being convinced to go back, I wrote my honors thesis and it was called Women Are Bitches, Men Are Leaders. And so it just feels like so love full that. Circle to be back in this work, you know, almost 15 years later. And I love what I do. Like right now I'm in California. I'm talking to ladies who are interested in running for Congress or are already running for Congress. And it's like so empowering for me. And I feel so humbled to be in this work at this level and, you know, being able to like really move the needle on these things that we were talking about. I think having more women in elected office, especially at the federal level, is going to change these things. It's already changing things. We've seen a few policies come down or, you know, get into law the last few months, which is really exciting, that help pregnant people, that help women, But we're just going to see more of those when we have more women elected to office. So in my role at Emily's List, you know, I do kind of a full gamut, whether it's recruitment, whether it's, I kind of love to say I'm like part-time therapist, again, part-time, you know, political advisor to many campaigns across the, you know, my region for the country, everywhere from Congress to governor. And so it's an incredible privilege to be able to work with these women. So we do everything from like recruiting campaign managers and finance directors to setting up budgets to putting together, you know, media plans and, you know, all of the things that kind of, and I'm not going to throw all the jargon at the wall here, but like all the things that have to go into running a professional and lean operation, we help women set up. We you know, give them the resources and really the confidence to run a campaign and a winning campaign. I always say, like, I'm in the business of electing women, but I'm also in the business of winning. And that's what we do at Emily's List. And so really excited for 2024. It's going to be an incredible cycle. We have obviously presidential at the top of the ticket. I believe that we have a very strong opportunity to take back the House. So We have incredible ladies all across the country, incredible men too, but, you know, I don't work with them. So incredible ladies that, I mean, are just, and like I say, like going back to the beginning of our conversation, a lot of these women were like community organizers or like PTA presidents or started, you know, were a stay-at-home mom and then ran for city council. I mean, it's just like talking about it right now, like I'm getting chills. Like the stories I hear are absolutely incredible. And it gives me hope because I know there's a lot of shit right now in politics and it's easy to feel like we're never going to do anything. But when you go and talk to these women who are running for Senate and Congress and governor, like it gives me hope at the end of the day. Like we're doing things, we're changing things. Gonna take a long time, but gotta start somewhere.
Totally. It's step by step, bit by bit. Like, I think too, it's what we've learned in politics is like redefining also what a win is. Like maybe it's not winning the first time, but it's winning the second time. It's making like inroads in different places. And, you know, that is always sort of a changing situation. But I'm super curious to your point about potentially winning back the House in this next race. What, you know, states, what areas give you hope? Like, where are the sort of like rays of sunlight? They're like, ooh, everyone should pay attention here.
Yeah. So I'm in California right now, and this is one of the states I work in. And, you know, I always say, and I think this is like something that you probably have heard from other folks, is like taking back the House runs through New York and California, right? There's so many opportunities. I think that's where both of you are from, right? Or live, right? Mm-hmm. Maddie, you're in California, Sam, you're in New York. So we need you out there helping us win some of these seats. So I think the key obviously is holding on to our incumbents, right? Protecting them, making sure they get reelected, but also, you know, winning some of these red to blue seats that we used to hold in the past. Now with redistricting, like we, you know, in last year it was a better year than we thought, but we did lose a lot of seats on the congressional level. And so looking at that map and seeing, and I can tell you right here in California, there is a ton of opportunity to flip congressional seats from red to blue. We've held them before. We have phenomenal candidates. It's just going to, you know, it's still early, but it's never too early to run a campaign. I always say, you know, early money is like yeast. It makes the dough rise is our mantra here at Emily's List. So I would say to your question, New York and California, obviously there's going to be like little pieces and little, you know, races across the country that are, you know, don't exist just in those states, but those are the two big states I would keep an eye out for. The primaries here in California is in March. It's the jungle primary. So then it's just the top two. So, you know, we're going to probably see a lot of Dem on Dem races. I don't necessarily think that's bad. I mean, honestly, like great because then we know we end up having a Democrat at the end of the day. But yeah, it's going to be a long road ahead, but I'm feeling confident. You know, it would be, this is our year. Like turnout is hopefully going to be high. So we just got to, you know, keep talking about these races and these candidates. And yeah.
Yep. Agreed.
Totally. Plus, I mean, all the other side is doing is having like Lauren Boebert and, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene fight each other. So I think we're in a good spot. You know, I really.
So bad.
Yeah. And they're just, yeah, so many things the other side is doing that we will save for another episode, perhaps. But thank you so much for this amazing conversation. We loved hearing your story. We loved digging into all of this campaign manager stuff. And I think your insight is super helpful for people who are just curious about the space or maybe want to get into it as well. So thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate you.
I appreciate both of you, ladies. You're amazing. Thank you for all that you do.
You too.
Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.